Before we begin, I want to acknowledge our sponsors. The most recent award is the Alliance for Climate Protection, Al Gore's nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and encouraging action to combat climate change, a topic we discuss in one form or another on every show. GreenWorks natural cleaning products are my current favorite in my home. We use them, love them, hope you'll give them a try. Also, Mighty Leaf Tea is my drink of choice, not only each morning but throughout the day and evening, having their Bombay Chai right now. With dozens of choices, including many organic varieties, you'll find something for everyone in their line of great green teas, a great way to green your routine, I'm trying to say. And last but not least, Sustainable Life Media is our content sponsor. They're allowing us to feature their top speakers at their upcoming Sustainable Brands Conference. We're going to be talking more about that. But without further ado, he's a very busy and brilliant guy. I want to welcome to the Green Front Dr. Peter Glick. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Betsy. Thanks for having me on.
I've been hearing a lot about peak water lately. That's something that you've been talking about for years. Have we approached that state? And what is peak ecological water anyway?
Well, let me describe what we mean by peak water. Maybe many of your listeners have heard the growing, ongoing debate about peak oil, that is when we will reach or pass the peak of production globally of oil, as we've already done in the U.S. many, many years ago. But water is a little bit different than oil. Water is typically a renewable resource, whereas, of course, oil is not. And so the challenge with peak water is understanding what really are the limits to how much water we can take and use from any given river or groundwater aquifer or lake or system. The truth is we're reaching the point where we can no longer take any more water from some of our systems. Some of our rivers are overtapped. Some of our groundwater aquifers are overtapped. And unlike oil, we'll get more water next year in the river if we use some this year. But there is an absolute limit to how much we can use. We cannot take any more water out of the Colorado River. We can no longer take water out of the Yellow River in China because the truth is we use it all. And so in many places, we've already reached the point of peak water. We have reached the limits of the renewable supply. So that's the basic idea behind peak water.
Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about how climate change affects water, but just want to jump in with this question, and that is, can we even, you know, rely on the formerly, you know, consistent weather patterns around the world in light of the climate change impacts we're seeing already, severe droughts, everything becoming more extreme, including more rain and wet areas, but you know, we're affecting the weather, and that is going to have an impact too, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the whole idea of peak water, even without the issue of climate change, is that there are limits to our renewable water resource and that we're butting up against those limits. Now, climate change throws in a terrible monkey wrench into all of those discussions in that the assumptions we've made about how much water a river can reliably provide for us or a watershed or a groundwater basin in the future, those assumptions are no longer true necessarily. Climate change is going to change, and I would argue is already changing, how much water is going to be available in any location at any one time. The hydrologic cycle that we all learn about in elementary school, that is evaporation and the formation of clouds and precipitation back to the ground and runoff back to the oceans or lakes and then evaporation again, that hydrologic cycle, that is the climate cycle. And as we change the climate, we will affect, for better or worse, and some places it might be better, but in some places it's going to be worse, how much water is going to be available for humans and the environment to use.
Another smart guy, Dr. Larry Brilliant, was speaking at a conference in the Bay Area recently called Turning the Tides. He called climate change the great exacerbator, and I think that's what you're addressing here.
Yes.
Whatever we've been seeing, it's going to get worse.
Well, we certainly have, again, without climate change, there are more and more places on the planet where we just have problems with how much water is available or with contamination of water resources. And climate change exacerbates all those problems. It makes all of those problems worse. Now, let me say one more thing about this peak concept. We do talk at the Pacific Institute about another concept, that is peak ecological water. And that's the idea that even if we aren't using all of the water in a basin, if humans are not sucking every aquifer dry, there are more and more places around the world where we've run into peak ecological water, that is the point at which using one more gallon of water actually causes more harm overall than it provides benefit for us. And in particular, ecological harm. And we see that in the Everglades. We see it in the Sacramento-San Joaquin Basin. We see it in the Colorado River or the Yellow River or the Aral Sea in the former Soviet Union, where we've long passed the point of causing serious ecological damage because of the water use by humans.
Now, in our next segment, Wes Maron, who is listening to our interview now, is going to talk about self-remediation. You know, we all think of the Earth as, you know, sort of resilient, and we've done a lot to her, especially recently. But is there a point at which self-remediation will not work?
Yes, that's exactly right. I mean, this idea of peak ecological water, you know, if you're the first human on using water out of a river, the fish may not care. The amount of water that you're pulling out may not make much of a difference. But as we add human uses to our ecosystems, to our water, to our rivers, to our groundwater basins, to other ecological resources as well, we do reach a point when it does matter. We do reach a point when we've taken enough water out of a system that all of a sudden the fish can't spawn or the health of the ecosystem diminishes to a dramatic degree. And self-remediation, the ability of our natural ecosystems to basically bear the burden of humanity, goes down and becomes more bad than good.
Now, you've mentioned removing water from its natural sources. What about what we've put into the water? And the most extreme example of that is what is happening to China's waterways.
Well,
what
sure.
We don't want to do. Look at China for the worst-case scenario, and what are they going to do about their pollution and the water issues they have?
Yeah, we at the Pacific Institute, we do a book every 2 years called The World's Water. It's published by Island Press, and it's sort of an update on the state of the world. And the most recent volume, the 2008-2009 volume, has a chapter on both peak water and on China's water. And China is unfortunately a distressingly good example of a place where all of the serious water problems we see around the world come home to roost. Water quantity problems and especially water quality problems. In China, there is very serious unresolved contamination with human wastes and industrial wastes of all of the major rivers, all of the major aquifers. You know, we see all of these problems in different parts of the world, but in China, they're especially severe and especially unaddressed by the institutions, the governments, by the people who have to deal with them on a day-to-day basis.
Now, what's your opinion of what's happened with Three Gorges Dam? Of course, that was got to be one of the largest water projects ever, you know, endeavored by man. Controversial, for sure. What did you see in terms of as it was happening and the political, involvement in that? And what's the current status of the Three Gorges on their river system?
Yes, very, very controversial. The Three Gorges Dam is the biggest dam built in the world. It's the largest hydro facility in the world by far. And like big water infrastructure anywhere, it has advantages and it has disadvantages. You know, from the Chinese perspective, 20,000 megawatts of hydropower is better than 20,000 megawatts of dirty coal, carbon dioxide producing power. And that's got to be weighed against the very large number of people that were displaced, probably over 2 million from their homes when the reservoir behind Three Gorges was created, by the destruction of the ecosystems in the Yangtze River, by the advantages the Chinese see for navigation. It's just an example of, on both the positive and the negative side, the massive implications of really big hydro projects. But the other piece of Three Gorges that's interesting is that it really raised for the first time in China the important role of public participation in decision-making.
Peter, can you participate in the beginning of our next segment? Because we're going to a break, and I have a few more questions for you and want to hear what you were saying in that thought.
Yeah.
Let's see. The planet is hot. Droughts, fires, floods. But our economy is cold. Recession, job losses. What if we could make our planet cooler and the economy hotter? We can, if we end our dependence on foreign oil and switch to clean energy. The carbon pollution from oil and coal that's melting the ice caps and warming the planet? Cap it and spur new investment and jobs in clean energy like wind and solar. Investing in clean energy could provide more than 37 million jobs for American workers in the next 20 years. That's right, 37 million jobs. Closing the carbon pollution loophole makes polluters pay and helps clean companies prosper so they can hire more workers. As a result, the planet cools, the economy heats up. Pretty cool. I mean, hot.
Paid for by the Alliance for Climate Protection.
Hey, tea lovers, this is Betsy Rosenberg, and I hope you know about my favorite brand of tea. If not, listen up. This is not just another brand of tea. It's an entirely different level of tea. I'm talking about Mighty Leaf, the tea that's so delicious it helped my husband and I kick our coffee habit a few years ago. Not only does Mighty Leaf use the whole leaf of teas grown in China, India, and beyond, and come in a flavorful assortment of blacks, greens, and whites, but the pouches that hold the tea are as high a quality as the tea itself. The silken biodegradable sacks are not only glue, staple, and chemical-free, they're gorgeous and made from corn. Check it out yourself. You'll find Mighty Leaf at Whole Foods markets across the country, in the finest hotels and restaurants, as well as online at MightyLeaf.com. My current favorites are the Organic Detox Infusion and Organic Green Dragon. So start your day with a cup of Organic Mighty Leaf Tea and get infused with your green routine. In stressful times like these, we need to detoxify our bodies as well as our environment. Discover for yourself why with just one cup of Mighty Leaf Tea, you'll be hooked for life. For personal and planetary health, drink Mighty Leaf.
This is the Green Talk Network, helping to provide a sustainable future for us all.
You're listening to On the Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg. The phone lines are open for your comments and questions at 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You can also send Betsy Rosenberg an email. Her address is betsy@thegreenfront.com. Now, back to On the Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg.
And I am honored to be joined in this segment by a couple of water experts extraordinaire, Dr. Peter Glick with the Pacific Institute here in the Bay Area. He speaks on water issues internationally and has been to Washington more than a few times to testify on what is needed. Also, Wes Marin is joining us in this segment. He is the author of a couple of books, most recently, Altered Perceptions, Addressing the Real Water Crisis. Before we go to Wes, Peter, you were just talking about Three Gorges Dam and the impact so far of that massive Mother of All Dams project
in
China.
Well, one other aspect of Three Gorges that I think is interesting and maybe relevant for larger solutions around water is that it's caused so much public disruption, so much disruption of local populations, that it's raised the level of public debate about water in China in a place where public debate may not be all that common. And so we are increasingly seeing the public starting to weigh in about what really ought to be done about sustainable water management and sustainable water use, and I think that's a good trend.
And what's your RX for what we should do in a minute or two?
Well, very quickly, I think we need to move to a whole new way of thinking about water. We need to move away from thinking only about supply to be thinking about supply and demand and efficient use. We need to be thinking about how to get communities involved in decision-making about water rather than let a small number of mostly male engineers make those decisions. I think we have to think about reusing water. Wastewater is no longer a liability, but an asset. Rethinking technology, rethinking proper pricing and economics. All of those things together could, I think, lead to what I call a soft path for water, a much more sustainable water system than we have today.
And before I let you go, I just have to ask you one quick question about the plastic gyre out there in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Did that raise a lot of awareness about what we're dumping into the ocean? Is it a real threat to the ecosystems there, or is it mostly a symbolic warning?
Well, I think it's both. I think we don't fully understand the nature of the environmental threat that's posing. But it's certainly, and I'd love to see some photographs and video of it brought back to the American people, has got to raise awareness about the vast quantity of garbage and trash and plastic bottles from drinking water and all the other things that we throw away and we think disappear, but don't really disappear.
There's no away. Well, David Rothschild hopefully is going to be heading out of San Francisco in the fall on a boat built from recycled plastic bottles called the Plastiki, based on the Contiki, and they're hoping to get out there to that gyre to document not only the adventure of getting there across the Pacific, but what's happening. So we'll get pictures and a lot more as long as hopefully they launch safely and get there.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much for being with us, Dr. Peter Glick, and for your very important work. And if you'd like to point people to a website, this would probably be a good chance to do that.
Sure. The best would be the Pacific Institute site, which is pacinst.org, P-A-C-I-N-S-T.org, or worldwater.org.
You heard it here first. Water is the next oil. Maybe you've heard it before because Greenfront listeners are pretty tuned into their environment. Thanks so much for being with us, Peter.
Thank you, Betsy.